This is AMDA On The Go, your gateway to expert discussions, journal article reviews, and innovation in post-acute and long-term care. AMDA On The Go is a presentation of the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Support for this broadcast is provided by the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now here's our host for AMDA On The Go, Dr. Wayne Saltzman.
Welcome to AMDA On The Go. In this episode, we'll be taking a look at the issue of deprescribing. In the March 13, 2018 special communication in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Dr. Irini Papanikolas, a leader in healthcare policy and health economics, reviewed major cost drivers in healthcare spending in the United States and other high-income countries. She found, among other things, and perhaps not surprisingly, that a major driver of system costs were pharmaceuticals, from 1.5 to 3 times that of other countries. In the following editorial response, Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, an Affordable Care Act architect and a former special advisor for health policy, noted that no other category of spending accounted for as much of the cost difference in total per capita health care as pharmaceuticals. But in special regard to elders and other patients with complex medical conditions, those of us who attend to the care of these unique patients across the continuum understand only too well that concerns around medications are not based on cost alone. In a 1997 Western Medical Journal article on Keys to Successful Aging, the authors commented that the proper use of medications was perhaps the single most important medical strategy in the care of elderly patients, identifying specifically considerations around unique pharmacodynamics and kinetics, adverse drug interactions, medication noncompliance, polypharmacy, and over-the-counter drugs. At the 2018 annual conference for AMDA, the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine, entitled Navigating a Changing Landscape in Post-Acute and Long-Term Care, we find that the same medication use concerns from over 20 years ago are far from resolved today. Providers are discussing today that the geriatric mantra of start low and go slow should be augmented to start low, go slow, or consider reducing and taking away. That is, introducing the concept of deprescribing. Dr. Kamal Wadley, Dr. Duraj Mahajan, and John Durr focused their conference presentation on that concept, and all three are here with us today. Dr. Wadley is a geriatrician and an assistant professor of clinical medicine at the Indiana University School of Medicine. He has a master's degree in public health from the University of Texas, and he is a certified medical director. Dr. Duraj Mahajan is the president and CEO of Chicago Internal Medicine Practice and Research in Chicago, Illinois, clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He is a certified medical director and certified in infection control and healthcare quality. And John Durr is a fellow in the American Society for Consultant Pharmacists, former executive vice president of ACA, the American Healthcare Association, and chief consumer affairs officer for the Care Community Platform of Matrix Care. Gentlemen, welcome to AMDA On The Go.
Hello.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Dr. Mahajan, as we think about your presentation, finding the medication sweet spot for frail elders in the nursing home, what led you to focus on issues around deprescribing? What are the justifications for it? And why focus on the long-term care setting?
Wayne, thank you for having us here and giving us the opportunity to talk about this very important topic. As you know, deprescribing is the buzzword at this conference. And we know that for the last several years, the acuity of patients that are coming to nursing home is getting higher and higher. And that comes with the problem that routinely a nursing home patient would have a couple dozen medication on the medication list. Now the technology and pharmacy interventions and having them in the medical record in electronic format has been far lagging. And so this issue has been raised, and we have now several people work on this topic. And so there is evidence now that there are tools that have been tested, and therefore something that we thought about for several years that could not be done, but we can do it now because we have several tools available for us now.
John Durr, in your presentation, you discussed the relationship between multiple comorbidities leading to more medications and more costs. As providers, this idea seems self-evident, albeit obviously concerning, but you also discussed this concept of the prescription cascade, which is inherently more concerning, and to many providers may not be so evident. And to me, it almost seems like a car careening off a cliff. What is the prescription cascade, and why is it a concern for our aging population? And perhaps you can talk a little bit more about deprescribing in general and what true deprescribing can be viewed as.
I think one of the most major changes that's happened is that we're really dealing with person-centric, e-longitudinal care, and that's caused a lot of different things. And before, we had a number of different specialties that handle a complex patient. Now we have one, preferably the geriatrician, that should do it along with the senior pharmacist, which is a certification that ASCP does. They carry a person holistically through the whole spectrum of care. So what's been happening is, it even happens with me, because I'm an elderly person, I'm not frail, but you go to each different specialist, they give you a prescription based on what they think is an indication that they are handling. Then you go to the next one, and go, which each disease state, because it seems like the country deals in disease states rather than chronic care complex patients that are frail and that. When I went to pharmacy school, there was a key word that was used a lot in school. It was called titration of dosage. I actually even hug a physician every time I hear a physician say they're going to titrate the dose and that, because that's what we need to do, and that's what deprescribing does. It's just, it's compounded. The cost is not only to the government, but the cost is also to the person in their co-pays and all that, along with quality of life and the side effects and all that that go with it. So we've just got to cut it down, because sometimes a medication is used to react to the complications of a previous medication, and the cascade just keeps going on and on without somebody stopping. And there used to be a term called cold turkey and all that, and that's really what deprescribing is starting to do, and we have to do it.
So there are actually two concerns that seem to be overlaying everything, and that is not just that multiple specialists are prescribing medications that at the end of the day end up being a huge number, relatively speaking, of medications for the primary provider to try to discern, or the provider in the long-term care environment, but also the concept of a medicine creates situation X, so then another medicine must be dealt with to deal with situation X.
Right, and also, you know, a lot of which used to be legend items as a prescription-only type have been made over-the-counter now, and we don't really look at those. And that has to be looked at as well, because they were once before a prescription item. Now they're over-the-counter, and that makes it even more complex.
And we're going to be talking about the over-the-counter burden. Dr. Wagle.
John just mentioned about a big system picture, but also a very specific example for a patient. For example, if we start a calcium channel blocker for a high blood pressure, and then the person develops pedal edema, and then we give diuretic to address that leg swelling, then you have a dizziness, and then we give meclizine to address that dizziness, and then you have constipation or some other symptom, and then you add. So this is another way of looking at the cascade problem that I usually teach my learners.
Dr. Wagle, you referred to barriers to deprescription in the long-term care setting, barriers that appear from the look of it, to be overwhelming and at multiple levels. The patient and the family, the provider, the interdisciplinary team, and the system and policy level. Can you lead us through some of these barriers to deprescribing?
I think it's high time to critically look at barriers at different levels and dig thoroughly the source of barriers and how can we address it. For example, barriers in patients and caregivers. One of my favorite examples is a patient of mine asked, told me that she really needed a medicine because she really likes the nursing aide who comes in the evening shifts, and her mom was really benefited by that medicine, and she's really bought into that concept, and she's demanding pretty much from me to get that medicine. Also, person is, some of the medicines are started by their specialist, cardiologist, neurologist, and they don't want to, the primary care or the sniff doctor to touch any of those medication, or they may be taking a medication for many years and they feel like they've been doing fine for so long without those medication, and why should they worry about those medicines now? So those are some patient and caregiver level barriers. If you look at provider, there's a lot of misperception or perceived barriers as well. We feel like if someone else is starting, other provider, colleague of ours started that medicine, we do not want to touching their space. Or we may be so strained with a clinical guideline. For example, there was a recent guideline on use of statin for appropriate patients, and if a person could be on a high dose statin to address their cardiovascular risk, but maybe the person is frail, losing weight, and maybe not an appropriate candidate for a statin. So just narrowly focusing only on guidelines and can be one of the barriers for prescribers.
Yeah, the interdisciplinary team, though, especially in the post-acute long-term care world, is crucial. What are the barriers to the interdisciplinary team?
I actually found the interdisciplinary team members, some of the team members do not really know what their role is in deprescription. We are intuitively know what's the role of nursing, providers, pharmacists, but what about the role of a CNA, qualified medication aide, dietary, activity, therapy person, who are all in the part of the team addressing that patient. Interestingly, the time we spend as a provider with the patient is much less than the time a caregiver or an activity or a therapy person will spend with the patient and caregiver. And they have all interactions and they can influence a patient's or influence the initiative and deprescription.
Mr. Durr.
Just one thing on that TARP thing. I think the focus has to be on the patient or person, and they have to start taking a little bit more control of themselves, because that's the person. It may not happen this year or next year, but we have to keep moving that way, because they have to be in charge of their own health and have their home care team, because it's really a partnership. And in this thing, it's a partnership between the pharmacist, the physician, and the patient, and their care team. It could be their family. So I think as soon as we get our minds going, so we're looking at the patient holistically, which really the geriatrician and the pharmacist does, and then we can bring the other people into the care team. But somebody has to be responsible, and I think it's really the patient.
And as we know, in today's medical environment, the focus on the patient as one within a shared decision-making model has really become the forefront of care. Involvement of the patient in their own care is really key.
Our interview will continue after this brief message from the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine, the only foundation dedicated to advancing the field and practice of post-acute and long-term care medicine. Our foundation is totally unique in focusing on issues of competence, quality, and the value we bring to patients in this setting. Please support the foundation at paltcfoundation.org.
We're talking with Kamal Waghle, Dr. Duraj Mahajan, and John Durr regarding deprescribing. Dr. Mahajan, I want to be a bit provocative with you. Medication reconciliation continues to be the bane of patient care for providers across the continuum. Despite multiple transition models such as Boost, Project Red, and the Coleman model, we still are not able to stabilize the reconciliation process. In addition, there are additional stressors at multiple levels regarding opiate use in this era of crisis, as well as other high-risk medications such as antipsychotics and anticoagulants. We know that 1 out of 5 emergency room visits by elders are due to adverse drug reactions, and the potential for medication reactions, either positive or negative, for elders taking seven or more medications is 100%. If we cannot reconcile medications well, how can we consider deprescribing initiatives?
And I'm going to ask you why. Why we can't do a medication reconciliation. In this day and age where I don't know my three-year-old child can do so much on that iPhone, that is way much complex when it comes to technology and sort through their games and pick their avatars and all of that, and which is way, way, way complex than a simple medication reconciliation process is. Now, the hospitals have achieved it. They've achieved it over, 5 years ago in an electronic format, and on paper format they've been doing for over a decade. And we know medication reconciliation saves lives and prevents all adverse reactions. And we go back to the point where there's so much fragmented care, and physicians and providers, they still believe more is better. And so every time you go in, you go to a psychiatrist, they feel like giving an antipsychotic medication. You go to a cardiologist, they will give medication for heart. You go to a neurologist, they'll give a nerve medication. So we all need to understand that it is time to come together as a team and put the patient at the center of the care. And we know the evidence says that more is not good. And for elderly people, most of the times, if you have a new reported symptom, it's probably because of the medication that you're already taking. And we know that innovation comes when there is a necessity, and innovation is what is needed. And as you see in our presentation, we are using some very innovative things that are being done now just out of sheer necessity, just to stop this madness. And we will show some fairly simple to use websites and portals where you can go and put medication diagnosis conditions, and it walks you through a very simple way to find out what medications can be safely discontinued. But why? Why do we have to go to a different portal? Why can't we just do that in a central medical record that spits out every time you log in saying, hey, your patient has way too many medications that can be safely discontinued? We don't have to log into five different portals to just find out that a constipation medication is not needed. This patient is having diarrhea.
Mr. Durr.
The key is really one true source of information for medication. I was on a grant with RAND because there is a new assessment coming out on medication reconciliation. And one of the things we put in there is that we're asking the physician to write why they indicated and prescribed that drug, because that's not on the prescriptions now. So we as a pharmacist don't know why something was prescribed. But I think it's building on Dr. Raj says, it's really a one source. And it's really the patient has their own EMR or something like that. And then you can access that, and then that's the one place all the meds are listed.
As we're wrapping up, I have one other question, a little bit more specific about process. In a 2011 Age and Aging study that you all referenced in your presentation, Loganathan and others conducted a systematic review on interventions to optimize prescribing in care homes. The review concluded that there was no one interventional strategy that has proven to be effective. Despite this finding, are there potential strategies for successful deprescribing for the individual provider and or the interdisciplinary team? You discussed the motivational interview and deprescribing initiative. Are there tools available that can help providers and teams in the deprescribing initiative?
We lack rigorous, strong, randomized controlled trials looking for a long-term, looking at the effects of deprescription. But that's only one aspect of the reviews, and there are actually validated tools which are utilized for deprescription effort. And in the strategies, we can use different way to engage patients, caregivers, interdisciplinary team for deprescription. Our approach will be to look at this approach in two ways. One is a process mapping, looking at where in the step of patients coming in, interacting, team rounds, quality assurance meeting, discharge planning, where in that process we can intervene and how, and who in the interdisciplinary team will be taking ownership in that process in doing what. I think that is an in general process mapping, which is very important to do. The second will be to utilize tools to help that process mapping, and that tools have different tools, like we know Beer's criteria, stop and start criteria, but also there are other tools to engage patients and family. As John mentioned, patient is at the center of all this process, patient and caregivers. And motivational interview is traditionally used for addressing smoking cessation, alcohol, the addiction, but also it really elicits this process of collaborating with patient and family, caregivers. The first question we could ask is, hey, how you feel about taking 10 medications? And we can get person's feeling or perception of what is their view of taking a lot of medications. And then we can empathize on their need because of various reasons, and we can create a discrepancy. We can show a discrepancy. You don't want to take a lot of medication, but you have to take these medicines. And I'm here to help you with the evidence and process. And I won't just stop and walk out. I will be with you throughout the process, from deprescription until I'll follow up, I'll monitor the symptoms, and I'll be with you throughout this deprescription process. I think this process will definitely include some of the concept of motivational interview.
So clearly from this discussion, the process of deprescription is an evolving one. And I very much appreciate the expertise of Dr. Wagle, a geriatrician and assistant professor of clinical medicine at Indiana University School of Medicine, Dr. Mahajan, the president and CEO of Chicago Internal Medicine Practice and Research in Chicago, Illinois, and John Durr, the chief consumer affairs officer for the care community platform of Matrix Care. Gentlemen, thank you for contributing to AMDA On The Go.
Support for this broadcast is provided by the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM, pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, please email cmd@paltc.org with your name and the podcast title. Thank you.